Hello and welcome to episode number 370 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
We are back to the TV world again, which has been extremely kind to us.
Quite familiar.
Yeah, it's been amazing recently. Like, some of the things that we've obviously got to talk about on the show, with, of course, the fall of the House of Usher being the pinnacle of that recently. But then Chucky has been phenomenal lately. Such a shame that we didn't have it this week. Like,
I know, it felt like a massive void in my life.
I know, I had just a Chucky shaped hole in my heart for the past week. Where I was really looking forward to it, and then you just have that realization that no, and you just don't know when it's going to be back, and they've left it in such a good place. I just can't wait to keep watching it. But we'll have to wait and see next year for that one. But yeah, we'll be talking about the return of Creepshow this week, which is nice. It's been a while for the old Creepshow on the old Shudder. But yeah, first off, a little bit of news. Actually, there's only one item that I just shoved in here. This is kind of featured in the news a few times, and I've kind of avoided it because it's what is there really to say? Basically about the new Terrifier. We know it's coming, and it's okay, it's cool, but what is there to add? But we do have a little bit of, basically, we have a release date, and then we also have a theme, which I don't think we've really touched upon on the show, which I do think gives this a really interesting dynamic as a third film. So it's out next Halloween, October 25th, 2024, which is nice. It just got a small re-release in cinemas in the States, Terrifier 2, and with that is a teaser for free, which I think will be making its way online shortly, but hasn't currently. But they have released some key art or a high-res poster, which is awesome, and I think I'd read this, but I hadn't really clicked that's exactly what they were going for until I saw this artwork, because this is a straight-up Christmas film.
Amazing.
Yeah, so it's being touted as a Christmas slasher. This poster is amazing, where it's basically Art, who's cut off Santa's face, Leatherface style, and is wearing it like a necklace, with all these body parts in the tree behind him. It's excellent. It's so on brand for Terrifier. And I'm really excited for that being a Christmas thing. I hope to God that it's not 4 hours long. But if this is a normal film length and it's a Christmas theme, that's so good. I want to see him in every different bizarre theme, but absolutely starting with Christmas is perfect for me, because we just need more Christmas themed slashers in general. It just works so beautifully, as we saw last year. So yeah, what do you make of, obviously, there being a third Terrifier movie first and foremost, but then I think most importantly, the Christmas angle, because I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Can just have some real fun with it. You know, we saw a really great, violent Christmas movie last year. And so, you know, to see what the next level of that could be with Terrifier stepping in, you know, we could get some real gnarly kills with the Christmas theme. And yeah, I kind of just hope that they don't really try to continue what they've done and just focus on the good bits, focus on art, focus on the gore and the craziness, and just give us dumb fun. You know, because it's what we said about the last movie, where it had too much screen time that wasn't dedicated to giving us what we wanted. So just focus on that, and don't make a 4-hour movie. Just make a 80-minute slasher movie at Christmas with the insane gore and violence that you put in these movies.
Yeah, I would love that. Do I have faith they're going to do that? Honestly, no. I think they're going to lean more into what they did last time, because obviously it was so successful, first and foremost, which makes sense. You know, Terrifier 2 was a massive hit. Obviously, the first one was, but 2 just really changed the game, in terms of, for an independent film to do what that did and make the amount of money that made on such a small budget. So I think they will do that. But then the other side of it is that COVID was a thing, which obviously doesn't affect this film, and I do think that was one of the main reasons for that bloated film length. So it could go both ways, yeah, we shall see. It's very exciting though. It's one of those things that we've perhaps didn't like the last movie as much as we'd wanted, even though there's still I'm still so fond of it. It's one of those things of watching it and then having to talk about it directly after, there was so much stuff that we didn't like. But as time goes on, you focus just on those kills, on those amazing art sequences, and it ends up being more fondly in your heart, I think, over time.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, we'll look forward to that one next year. But yeah, that is it for the news. Shall we talk about this week's TV show?
Do it.
Let's talk about Creepshow Season 4. So yeah, it's finally back. You know, Creepshow has been something that we've featured heavily since its debut on Shudder. It's obviously modern day sort of reinvention from the classic film anthology series. Back in 2019, now it's been starting on Shudder as a TV show. And we had a lot of it in a very short period of time. You know, we had the first season, you know, that ended October 2019, so just prior to COVID. Then obviously in 2020, we had two specials, which were both great. And then the following year in 2021, we had two seasons, which was bizarre at the time. You know, one of them in April and then one of them in the traditional Halloween slot. And I remember saying at the time, like, oh, they need to get back on that Halloween cycle because this is just such a Halloween-focused show. And obviously they didn't do it last year. So it's been 2 years now since we've seen a bit of Creepshow. It hasn't felt like it's been that long. But it is back. And so, yeah, there is obviously six episodes, 12 segments in total. And, yeah, we're going to tackle this one differently, I guess, to what we've done, you know, traditionally. You know, we kind of did it a little bit with the VHS movie recently. But, like, we're not going to go through and talk about each segment individually. It's going to take too long. Like, 12 segments is a lot. So we're just going to talk about this more like how we do our film discussions, where, and especially then it won't be spoilery either. So it'll just be like, what did you think of it overall? And then you can obviously call out the bits you liked, the bits you didn't like, etc. But, yeah, I mean, is that – do we need to say anything else, or is that the preamble done on the old Creepshow?
I think that's it, definitely. You know, like we said, we're not going to go into it in great detail. It feels weird. Like, when you said season four, I was like, man, it's crazy that they're on four already. Mm. And then I was like, man, it feels like forever since I've seen Creepshow as well.
Yeah, that's not including the specials as well.
Yeah, exactly. We got so much in such little time, and yet we've been waiting for a long while for this. Mm. And, you know, I didn't look at the director's list in great detail, like, going into this and like, casting or anything like that. I just kind of was just ready for more Creepshow. And ultimately, that's what I got with this season. You know, I think I got pretty much every segment was like, almost the same for me in terms of... it just was this real Goosebumps-esque, just zany horror story that the second you kind of know the crux of it, you kind of know exactly how the episode's going to go down, you know? And it's kind of like, oh, okay, this episode is about vampires. This one's, you know, about a writer that's got a weird typewriter, you know? And it's just like all of these... you know, just generic weird things in horror. And then and the episode kind of just played out exactly like I thought they would for majority of like all 12 segments. But at the end of each episode, when they kind of ended, I just kind of had a little smile like, yeah, Creepshow. Do you know what I mean? And it kind of did that where it was just like, it really did deliver on that base level. And I think this season probably has like, I don't think there was a. There certainly wasn't an episode that I hated, and I don't think there was even a segment that like really pissed me off, because they're always so short and they're always just. This season was always so zany that it always kind of delivered either a wacky story or a wacky conclusion enough to kind of give me a little chuckle. But I don't, what this season I didn't really do for me is it didn't give me like a banger. From memory, like when I've just like refreshed myself on the segments, I was like, oh yeah, they're all kind of cool, you know, they all have these moments, but they're all very similar for me. There's some that I liked more than others, but there weren't, the needle never went like crazy high, but like I say, on the good side, it never went crazy low for me. I think like the Romero in 3D episode was the one that I was kind of really hoping would deliver something really cool, mm-hmm. and it ended up giving me something cool that I wasn't expecting. But yeah, other than that episode, I really had no expectation. And it was a case of like, that was the finale episode where I was like, God, we had to wait so long for that. And, probably was paired with one of the ones that was much less of a good episode. It was a really slow episode that had a very quick payoff. Mm-hmm. And, it's almost like they paired that with the Romero one.
Yeah, that felt shorter as well, didn't it, the second one?
Yeah, it just felt like a really, like, very bare bones of an idea. Mm. But yeah, that was kind of the whole season for me, where it was just a very safe line. And it just really felt that they delivered the core Creepshow experience. And I'm like, yeah, like, if someone was to say to me, oh, yeah, I'd really like to watch Creepshow, what episode should I watch? I wouldn't be going to this season and being like, oh yeah, episode 4, segment 1 is a banger. I think there has been stronger episodes, but I think, yeah, this just delivered more of this fun creep show. And for me, it has a place where I enjoy just seeing like these weird things, and they're short enough that you can just digest them and move on. And yeah, even if they don't move the needle incredibly high, it's a fun avenue to see some zanier horror. And I think that's the biggest thing, that, you know, they can kind of do those sort of weird things that are, you know, more traditional TV show, let alone a movie, just can't.
Mm.
So, yeah. I mean, what did you think of this season?
Yeah, I pretty much agree. Like, I think it was overall a consistently good season. I always find Creepshow to be something that is quite hard to talk about in like how we talk about things on the podcast, because it is such a switch off your brain type of show for me, and just a very casual watch that just always delivers what I want it to be, which is never something that demands your attention, or, you know, it's like the opposite of what House of Usher was. That was this like enthralling saga that like every moment I was in anticipation of what was next, and then I couldn't wait to talk about it for hours on end and discuss multiple different moments. Whereas Creepshow is these fun, usually 20 to 25 segments that, you know, aren't going to do anything earth-shattering, but they just deliver these fun horror injections. And I would almost rather not watch it, you know, a month, or, I mean, we even took our time with this, and even that felt like a bit rushed, where I'd like to just have it there and just be like, when you've, you know, when you finished a film or a TV series or a video game and you want just that little filler thing for a little while, I think just throw on an episode of Creepshow, you're going to get two different things. The chances are you're going to like one of them.
It almost feels like a YouTube channel. Definitely. Where you just kind of want to have a subscription and you're like, yeah, I got 20 minutes to kill. Oh, I'll just whack on and see what zany horror stories on that YouTube channel that I like.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like you say, there's something to throw on before you go to bed at night, or yeah, you just want that little horror kick, and it will deliver that because you'll get the fun monster stories. You'll get some pretty good comedy in here as well. I would say like the one thing that right off the front is kind of what it's lacking is those kind of cameo appearances. Because I can only really remember Tom Atkins being the only one in this season who was great. He was in probably one of the weakest segments, unfortunately. But like, you know, we've had Tobin Bell and, you know, the different people, Barbara Crampton and stuff. So like, it's a shame that there wasn't a couple more faces in here. Because
he had some Flanagan appearances.
Yeah, true. And that one was co-written by Jamie Flanagan as well. So, and directed by Greg Nicotero. He only directed two, along with the George Romero one. You know, there is flashes of that, yeah, but I would have liked more of that. Like, there's only even a couple of actors that I recognize from anything, where it was like, oh, it's funny, this guy was in Scary Movie. And like, I always like that when that randomness happens with Creepshow. And I feel like that happened a lot in the first three seasons, that they would just pull these like random actors from stuff into it. And so I'd like to see more of that. But yeah, it was still cool. Like, it's what I liked about it was that it was pretty diverse. Like, you had a lot of, even though it is all mostly comedy focused, there's like, there's werewolves, there's zombies, there's vampires, there's ghosts. You know, there's more traditional monster stories. Like, I do think they did a good job of really ticking off a lot of different things. And for the most part, I liked them. Like, I think the werewolf one was probably lacking for what you can do with werewolves, but liked the vampire one quite a bit. I always am a, you know, I really like the throwing vampires in as like an established thing in that world.
I love that shit as well. Like, it was probably one of my favorite segments, just because it felt like True Blood-esque, where it was just like, oh, okay, we're in a world where vampires exist, and these are now the rules of society with existing vampires. And that's, I really like that as a concept.
We've seen that with, you know, obviously we've seen it with vampires, but we've seen it with werewolves and zombies and stuff. And to me, I never really buy it as much, whereas there's something about vampires of like, it's like, oh yeah, we have this synthesized fake blood. And I also think the rule set around vampires is so ludicrous. You know, the whole, like, you get burned by daylight, you can't see your reflection, you can only kill yourself with a stake through the heart or a silver bullet. Like, I love how they're these weirdly specific things. And so I really think it suits not only comedy, but then also, suiting it into, like, how would someone live with preposterous rule sets, you know, like the girl who's like trying to live her life, and so she can only babysit at night, she can only work at night, she can only explore the town and go to the cinema at night and stuff like that. Like, I do find that super interesting, so that was fun. I really liked the ghost one. I think about what one really stood out to me, it's probably that one. This kind of kid with his parents as ghosts. Liked the comedy in this one a lot. Really liked the performances of everyone. Kind of gave me like the Frighteners vibes with these like annoying ghosts that you just can't get rid of, which again is, I love that they take concepts that you're already familiar with and just expand upon them and make them as these fun little shorts, because that is one of those things. Again, you're taking the current rule set of what you think a ghost is, which is that it can just pop up at any time and talk to you. And like, if that were the case,
if that ghost is really fucking annoying.
Yeah, they're just going to be there 24 hours a day, like constantly berating you. And especially if it is like your disappointed parents as this kid. So I love that. And this was also one of the few that kind of, Creepshow always has like a ridiculous reveal at the end, and then they try and get to like a fun kind of end point, and they both worked for me. The kind of like double twist on twist worked, and then like the final shot of where we end the story really worked for me as well. So I really liked that one. I was trying to see actually what that was called. It was that Meet? No, that's
Parent Death Trap.
Yeah, that's the one. So yeah, that was good. It was Meet the Belascos was the vampire one. Also in that one was Cheat Code.
I enjoyed that one.
Which I found to be a really interesting one. Like, I, again, another shtick that I always am interested in is kind of like, ooh, spooky haunted video game from the 80s. And it's like, oh, here's this thing that no one's ever beat, and now you know why. Like, it's early on, there was definitely a lot in it that the video game fan in me has to just switch off, because I'm like internally cringing of just certain comments about games, and like the way the game looks is not how old games looked, even though they think that's how old games looked.
It didn't deliver on the promise, that one, where like the concept, and like when they started to explain it, I was like, oh, this is gonna be a banger, and then it kind of didn't fully deliver. But
I quite liked the once it got to what it was, though, like when it was just characters in this world and how stupid that was, with like, especially with the alien finale, I did get a kick out of the last like 5 minutes of it.
It did go batshit, and I think it is one where, you know, there's a couple that, you know, I think Baby Teeth is the one I kind of said about after Romero, and Something Borrowed, Something Blue was the wedding one as well, with the monster, and like both of them just really kind of didn't feel like they were fun. Like, they were probably the weaker two for me of the season.
Yeah, that's Something Whereas Borrowed, like, a lot of them, I did not like that at all.
No. Whereas something like The Hat was quite a boring, generic one, but I kind of just enjoyed seeing it play out, like this writer and the success and everything else. And, you know, I think Grieving Process was another one that I kind of was like, when that first kind of started and she came back from hospital and was all fucked up, it reminded me a bit of like the stuff I like from the new Exorcist movie this year, where it was like, oh yeah, what the hell did happen to her? Like, why, you know, why has she come back like this? And you know, and then when she very quickly gets a thirst for blood, you start to get an idea as to what's going on. But it was still like fun, and like you say, that one was another one where it had the twist at the end, and kind of then the little fun cap at the end, and that one worked for me quite a bit as well. So yeah, you know, I think overall the bar was, you know, maybe two or three segments that weren't great but didn't like annoy me, just didn't over deliver. Probably then, you know, six segments that were really solid, and then two or three segments that were more enjoyable than that.
Yeah,
that would be where I'd bat.
Another one I really liked was Doodles. I found this to be really fun. Yeah. Very Goosebumps-esque for me, this one. And kind of once you learn what it's about and these drawings, I found it to be really fun. Like, maybe it was weird because it had a really cool concept with its ending, and kind of what happened I didn't think was going to be happening, but it just, I don't know, it almost lacked the point of it because it just came a bit too quick. Maybe I don't know why. It's weird because I'm thinking about it and I'm like, oh, that's cool how it ends, but I didn't consider this one to have a good ending like some of the other ones.
It was like the start, middle and end was all
the same.
But it just felt like it, yeah, I don't know, they just felt like there was something maybe missing a bit from it.
It was cool,
it was interesting, but yeah, it was cool. And and with that one again, I love the kind of twist at the end that gave us the payoff, where it was like, oh, you fucked up so bad, like how did you mess that up so bad, like, you know, to get yourself in that situation. And I just like, and then you have a little grin because of the little payoff, and then you think, yeah, that was a fun little segment, you know. And I think that's what this season did. Like, majority of the segments, when they ended, I had a little smile on my face and was like, cool. And yeah, I wasn't necessarily like, oh, I want to get to the next segment. Even when I was partially through an episode, it was mainly more in the last few weeks, I've just been sometimes in the mood to watch 20 minutes of a fun segment. And yeah, and every time it's delivered on that, you know. And I think if we had of made ourselves watch this over the course of a week to put a review up sooner, I do wonder whether my review would be very different. Would I feel fatigued by it because we didn't get crazy highs? But the fact that I got to absorb it in the way I wanted to really helped me to continue my enjoyment. And just, it feels like they know what Creepshow is. I think that's the thing. It really, and I think I've said this before about Creepshow, where it just really has an identity. And every time you watch an episode, whether it's, you know, just the whole package, obviously the wraparound with the cartoon helps a lot with identity. But I think just tonally and the way it feels, it, like, if you'd have said to me that this was made 20 years ago, these six episodes, I would have probably believed you. Like I can't think of anything stand out that really dates it massively. It just, it feels from a time and a place, and it really does capture what Creepshow was. And I think it in this new version, this new iteration of Creepshow, just has a really great identity, and you really know that, you know. And I think that's the thing that's special about it in comparison to some of these other ones. You think of something like American Horror Stories, and even if that has like banger segments, which it hasn't, but I still like, why does that show exist? What is its identity? Why are we calling it American Horror Stories? And, you know, the answers for that is that they can't write a full season, and they wanted to cram in little caveats from previous seasons into episodes and stuff. But, you know, and that's not exactly what we want. And you think of some of these other anthologies that we've got, but with Creepshow, it's just like, no, you know exactly what it is. You know, and I think that's what Twilight Zone struggled with in season one, and started to find in the recent season. And Creepshow just has had that from day one and just continues to keep its identity, which I think is so important for what it is.
Yeah, the presentation is phenomenal. Like, that's always one of my favorite things. Each episode, I always think, like, am I going to get sick of it? But from the moment you hit play, you get like the lovely opening credits, which is always great. But then I just love that comic book style. It, you know, they do a really good job of making this really feel like it is straight up adaptations of super old comics, because they feel genuine, the artwork and the kind of presentation. And I love just always reading the title and then reading those few words about, like, it'll just give you a few, like, a family moves in next door to some vampires, and you kind of immediately get a flavor for what you're about to see. And seeing that transition from kind of the page to the screen, again, it just gets you in of like, oh, I'm in Creepshow now. And I think that does such a good job of selling it, especially with the sound as well. Like, I always love the opening theme. I've always loved that aspect of it as well. Just, I think that I agree with you that goes a long way of selling what Creepshow is. We touched upon it briefly, but I did want to mention it, the George Romero in 3D episode. Because that was one that kind of, seeing it in the last episode, seeing that title, I was very excited going into this one. And I knew that Greg directed it as well. So I was kind of like, oh man, when you put his name in a title, you know, there's going to be something interesting. And we've seen, like, them basically do an episode of Evil Dead, which was crazy. You know, we've seen that one where Justin Long was, like, in that super old horror film, which was amazing. Mm. That was, like, one of the coolest segments they've ever done. Probably still my favorite. And so I didn't know what this was. And so when it is, like, then this one has comics in it, which is super cool, and they're kind of referencing all these things. But then when it actually was what it was about, it was just kind of boring. I was just like, oh, you've just done a pretty boring thing here. And I don't know how I feel about the way George is used in this episode either. What did you have any strong thoughts about this episode or this segment?
Yeah, well, it was one where I was enjoying, like, seeing George in the way that they kind of brought him in. And then I suddenly took a step back and was like, this feels odd. The someone that's passed is now, like, got this version of themselves that, you know, has never agreed with before. It's not like Carrie Fisher, being made into Leia again. It's like, no, this is just like, post this guy's death, his license has been sold and his likeness is now in this show. And I don't know, I was very aware of that. I don't know why.
Yeah, I was. But
I did find that a bit off-putting. But just seeing a rendition of George, also, I did pop for, because he's such a great guy. And just seeing, like, his little face and his huge glasses and stuff in this kind of, you know, comic, black and white comic book come to life was somewhat enjoyable, but it was a mixed bag of emotions. And then very much that once we got that reveal, the episode really didn't go anywhere, and it really didn't have that kind of payoff like a lot of them did. It didn't really feel like it had that twist and satisfying fun conclusion. It just kind of ended. I can't even really tell you, to be honest. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just kind of ended for me, and it didn't really, you know, land the way I hoped it would.
Yeah, I'm pretty much there. Like, it was, I had that initial pop, and it was cool, where I was like, oh, they're bringing him in this interesting way. But then, yeah, the more it lingered, the more I thought about it, where I was like, if this was Wes, like, I would fucking hate this.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, again, it's like, you know, it is nice to see him initially with his smiling face and that, because you have that initial, like, oh, it's great to see George. But then it is weird the more you think about it. And obviously he has such a legacy with Creepshow and stuff, why it does make sense more than just any other, you know, director you could throw in here. But it is just like, and you said, you know, you were aware of what was going on. And I think it's impossible to not be. You know, it's such like a big topic right now in everything, and certainly this whole likeness of actors passing, and, you know, what we've just seen with the Beatles releasing a new song in the past week, like, that whole situation is bizarre. And obviously you've got the people estates all saying it's great, and all the people that are still alive in the Beatles saying it's great, but it is still just, the part of me is just like, oh, this is a bit strange. And this is the world we're now coming to, that we are going to get, you know, and like I say, someone like George, clearly this wasn't signed off when he was alive. But then we do have actors that have signed off their likeness to be used in the future. So then it becomes a case of permission isn't the conversation anymore. It's just more about whether or not you enjoy it or whether it should exist, which is like a whole other conversation. So yeah, it's what the thing I don't like about it is I'm thinking all of this. Like, I can't, this is the opposite of what I just said about Creepshow, which is a switch off your brain, have fun show. And I was thinking I was thinking about the morality of fucking AI and using likeness of people who have passed and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, because we even talked recently about how with like Tolkien and how like the people that are currently in charge of his estate probably aren't treating it as good as, you know, previous people. And it's like that, it really gets murky. You can't trust anyone with this stuff other than yourself, other than the creator. You know, like no one's going to know what's best for Nightmare on Elm Street than Wes Craven. It doesn't matter who ends up with that. Like, there's only one person that can make that decision, and he can't make that.
At this point, yeah, the only person that should have a say in it can't. Mm. So it's all just secondary, you know.
Yeah.
Whoever owns it, for whatever reason, they're not Wes. So, you know, it's just less important to me.
Yeah, so it's just, I don't know, man. It gets a bit murky. But yeah, I wish... Even if I put that to a side, it was a fairly weak episode. Like, it was, the zombies were great, of course. Like, it's Nicotero involved in a zombie thing. Like, he's gonna smash it, and the zombies were excellent. But it just lacked a story. And, like, I love that whole things coming out of comic books. The 3D glasses, I love. I always pop for, like, a use of an old 3D glasses. Again, that, to me, that's perfectly in line with Creepshow. But you could have done something more interesting with that. It was, I don't know, it was a weaker one. But overall, there was plenty to like here. Like, say, the doodles one, the ghost one in particular, and then I really like the vampire one and the video game one. So that's like at least four segments that I'm going to take going forward and be like, yeah, these were super fun. So yeah, I overall, you know, feelings, and then I guess going into recommendations, like, I really liked this season a lot. It's hard to say where it kind of matches up, because it all blurs into one after a while. You know,
it really does.
Yeah, like, it doesn't have those standout, when I think of the Justin Long one, the Evil Dead one. Like, there's been, and even the special that they did, the live action special was brilliant as well. So there's been a few that are, like, really stand out. But then, yeah, there's certainly good stuff in here, and there's certainly been way weaker stuff in the past. So it's like, God, the way it averages out, I don't know. But it... Did it feel like a worthy season of Creepshow? Like, yes, that I really enjoyed. And I want Creepshow to continue. Like, selfishly, my two wants would be more cameos of horror legends. And I use the word legend loosely. Like, I don't mean you have to get, like, the AAA of horror. But I'm on about, like, any fun, familiar face that can be from horror past is welcome. And then the other thing would be, like, I would love, obviously, just a bigger budget, because it's something that constantly shows its head. And they do a really good job, actually. I think this season in particular, they did, like, some of the effects, like the Doodles episode, had... Ooh. Good visual and good practical effects. And even obviously the George Romero one had both as well. So they do a good job of hiding that. So maybe that isn't as much of an issue. But yeah, I would still recommend it. Like, if at this point you know, you're listening to a show about season 4 of Creepshow, you must be aware of it, like, in some capacity, from the old films to the new TV shows. You probably made up your mind, and we're clearly fans of all this, and I was satisfied as a fan.
Yeah, I'm pretty much there with you that, you know, it's I think this is a really strong season. If you like Creepshow, this is very much more of it. And if you don't, then yeah, you know, where do you start? And I just think it's all good. And I think with the anthology, it's just, I'll just whack on any episode that you feel like and just see what see what vibe you get. And you know, we've got four seasons, we've got multiple specials, and I think they're all, like, there's just a consistent level, and there's a consistent, like I say, feeling about it, an authenticity, where it's just, like, you're going to get a similar experience no matter what you get, and now with this season, it's just more of the same, where I do just think, you know, they delivered on the promise of Creepshow, which is ultimately it, and I think going forwards, that's just what I want them to continue to do. I think, yeah, you know, in this crazy world where they got a bigger budget, cool, but that carries risks as well. You know, does it lose that authenticity that I like so much? You know, and again, cameos, yeah, cameos are always great, and you're going to pop for them, and Like, you know, I was still like when it opened up and we got our Flanagan cameos, I enjoyed that, you know, and we had moments. And I think it was the season before, wasn't it, that was like really heavy with it. And I got a bit fatigued with that, to be honest, where like I think you probably need more than what's in this season, but probably not that many more. Like, probably what they needed to do this season was not spend Romero money. You know, put your cameos into people that are living as opposed to dead. And they probably could have got a couple of other decent living cameos instead of Romero. But yeah, like, I don't think it should be half the season has cameos in. I think there should be maybe three at most that's got a decent cameo.
Yeah.
But yeah, really enjoyed it still overall.
I was just looking actually what those episodes were, just so I can call them out, because we were talking about ones to recommend. So yeah, it was the Christmas special in 2020. Shapeshifters Anonymous was a great episode, and then season two. So the first episode the second segment in the first episode is public.
Was that the Evil Dead?
Yeah, public television of the dead. Like, I totally forgot that it was like Bob Rock meets Evil Dead. Like, oh, I need to rewatch that. It was so good.
Yeah, that's probably the highlight of Creepshow.
I think it is, the more I think about it. And then the last episode of season two, which was only one segment, was Night of the Living Late Show. That was the Justin Long one, which was fantastic. And all three episodes, unsurprisingly, were directed by Greg Nicotero. So, I think that was those ones. If you've not seen those three, you have to see those three for sure. But yeah, that was our discussion on Creepshow. We'll take a quick break and we will be right back. So yeah, that's pretty much it for another week. I've been watching quite a lot of films lately, though. There's one that you obviously talked about recently, so I won't talk about it too much. But I have watched that stunning best version so far, 4K, of Hellraiser.
Beauty, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just a joy. Like, it's so nice that the best version of the movie exists in the best package that's ever released for that thing. Like, I'm still in awe of it. Like, when I was sitting there watching the film, I just had it in my hand, just looking at it, being like, look at this shit, man. Like, look at it. It's crazy. I really have not seen anything like it. That, like, Arrow just went above and beyond in a way that I've just not seen. And so, yeah, the fact that the transfer of the film is perfection as well. I haven't watched any of the special features yet, which I'd really like to check out.
They're good. What I would say is that I skipped almost half of the special features because they were like...
It's always like recent conversations.
Yes, yeah, like
they're my least favorite.
Someone that wrote a book about Hellraiser has now recorded an interview sat exclusively for Arrow in 2023, and it felt very much like it was justification for new special features because they already had the Scarlet Box with a lot of features on already.
Yeah,
you know, like I said, the fact that the Leviathan documentary isn't on this 4K, it feels like they should have just added features and kept what they had before, but instead they really felt like, no, we need almost, because there's a part on the 4K where you go into like archival features.
Yeah.
And they're some of the best stuff.
Yeah.
And
that's like, what I was clearly looking forward
they
to.
Were on the other version.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and like when I watched them, there was like interviews with Doug Bradley and stuff. And I was like, oh, I've definitely watched this already.
Is there an old commentary with Clive Barker?
I didn't look into the commentaries.
Yeah, I don't
often look at commentaries because they're just you love a commentary, but I always find like I just kind of want to watch the movie at that point again.
Yeah, well, that was my thing because I've watched Hellraiser so many times and I enjoyed it, but I should have just immediately went to like a commentary version because I only watched Hellraiser like I think earlier this year anyway. I've definitely not listened to Hellraiser with the commentary, so that would be a one to look out for sure. Cool. There's a brand new, see, like. That's what I don't want. Like, brand new audio commentary with a genre historian and an author and a film critic. But then also, yeah, archival audio commentary with Clive Barker and Ashley Lawrence. Hell yeah, that's the one. And one with just Clive Barker as well. So I'll listen to both of them.
Yeah, definitely. It's cool. Like, the only problem is, because I've now watched Hellraiser 2 as well. Mm. I do think the 4K was better for Hellraiser.
Right, yeah.
Because watching Hellraiser 2 again, it does make me laugh how much of it is, it's similar to Hills of Ice Part 2, where it's got a lot of Hellraiser 1 in it. You do get the greatest hits of Hellraiser 1, like, in it.
Yeah, because do they show you, like, Jesus wept?
Yeah, that's, like, the opening.
Oh, yeah!
And, like, but it's low-hanging fruit, but I kind of dig it.
Yeah, I do.
You know, where I'm like, because then the movie that's wrapped around it is a banger as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's just like Hills of Ice 2.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, you should definitely watch Hellraiser on its own. But if you just watch 2, you'd get a decent, like, viewing of Hellraiser as well. It's kind of mad. And it was weird because when you go into those Hellraiser segments, they looked better.
Yeah.
And then you go back to Hellraiser 2. Particularly, there's a scene when they're in hell. And it's not been restored at all.
Yeah.
There's a 5-second, like, really... You know, like, when they have the...
the big Leviathan or whatever.
Diamonds. Yeah, yeah, the diamond kind of thing in the distance. And it's clearly, like, some sort of...
Yeah, well, the problem with that is...
That scene it's all, just wasn't upscaled at all.
Like, that's always looked like shit. And yeah. Obviously because
it's only gonna look like 4K shit.
Yeah, but it's all visual effects, and obviously that is way harder to do because it's like I'm not an expert in this stuff, but obviously they take the stock film and convert it, and so it's a lot harder if it's like a visual effects heavy sequence. It's interesting because there's a lot of movies, for example, like apparently Sin City is like that's never going to come out in 4K because of the visual effects, which just wouldn't work. And it's like it's fascinating with stuff like that because that was one I was looking up recently where I was like, oh, because I really want to rewatch Sin City.
Because that visually just looks so gorgeous when it came out. Like you'd be like, oh, 4K. That would be one where I'm like, oh yeah, I'd pick up a 4K Sin City. That would look sick.
Yeah, because the Blu-ray is stunning, and like I say, it's the visuals and the look of that film that is spectacular. But yeah, like I think Robert has said, like that's just never going to happen. it would like, basically require them to rework like all the visual effects.
But yeah, rewatching Hellraiser 2 has got me obsessed with Hellraiser, which is always a problem because when you've watched Hellraiser 1 and 2. And then you go
back to one. No, I'll tell you what you do. You read Scarlet Gospels.
Yeah, like, you know, but it definitely is still, like, just such a good movie. And when I was watching it, I was thinking, like, man, you know, there really is a real finite amount of sequels that are this good. You know, just in, like... Not even just in horror, in like films in general. Like,
well, horror has a better ratio than normal films by far.
Yeah, probably. But even then, there's not a great deal. Like, yes, there are horrors that have a lot of sequels, but like ones that are like absolute bangers. You know, that the list is quite short. Like, it would be interesting to do like a top 5 or a top 10 or something, but like. Hellraiser 2 is definitely on there.
Yeah, I think we did that as like a really early thing.
We might have done.
Because like for me, Saw 2 is definitely up there.
Yeah, Saw 2.
I think Record 2 is incredible as well. There was another one I just thought about and I've forgotten now. It's like, I mean, it depends. Like, do you class the Devil's Rejects? I was thinking of...
Yeah, Devil's Rejects.
Yeah, well, Devil's Rejects is like, do you count that? But I was thinking Scream 2 is like a major one as well.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, like, you dip into, like, when you got, like, such an established franchise. But I still think, like, it's just the sequel conversation. I think Scream 2 does come into there. But you know what I mean? Like, there is... I think the list is still quite small. Like, it's not a huge list. And Hellraiser 2 is incredibly high on that list.
Yeah, when you think about a lot of other big franchises.
You know, we know the number one spot.
Yeah, yeah, when the greatest movie of all time is a sequel. But, yeah, it's I've always been fascinated by that. Because, like I say, there aren't, you know, Freddy is not one. And, you know, Halloween. And it's just interesting that Friday the 13th, like, a lot of them don't have, like, the strongest second one. They usually go a few misses before they then get good again. Whereas, like I say, Hellraiser is so clear. It's so clearly the best Hellraiser sequel, like, no question. And the fact that it came so quickly after the first one always blew my mind. And how, obviously, the first one was based upon his book. Whereas it was like, they had to just make all that shit up. So I don't know
that's
who
the
was,
thing I was aware of.
Yeah, I was, don't know who came up with that. But whoever came up with the idea of continuing that and making Julia this then, like, new version of Frank, it's just, it's absolutely genius. I love it.
I think that's the thing, like, you know, that and the you know, the mental institution and how Channard is using people and stuff, like, you know, just so much of it is so clever. And I think that was the thing when I rewatched it, I was just like, man, this works so good. And they did so well to get everyone. The fact that we get, you know, Frank and Julia and we get Kirsty and obviously, you know, getting the Cenobites back and everything else. And it's like, yeah, you don't, it's these two movies, like the Cenobites are gone after this movie, you know, in Hellraiser 3, he's recreating that they're all new Cenobites apart from Pinhead. Mm. And then, you know, then it gets murky.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, man, they really did just like, I mean, you know, Channard just wrecks shop, let's be honest, didn't he?
Yeah. One of the things that really stood out to me, and I know we've talked about it before, but, like, in watching that first movie, is how obviously the fact that the Cenobites aren't in it too much. I think one of the biggest positives of that is, like, every time Pinhead says a line, it's iconic. There isn't a word in that film that isn't delivered in a way that is like, this is the best part of the film when you're watching it.
Yeah.
Like, every single, he probably has maybe, what, 20 lines in the whole film? And every every single one is like, this is the line of the film right there. And then he just always, then he's got this line, then he's got this line. And every single one is the perfect delivery of the performance and the look and everything, let alone the fact that those other Cenobites are just there and these, like, little shots in the background. It's just it's so fantastic.
Yeah, they all look so fucking good as well. That's the thing, all of the Cenobites visually just look fantastic, and it's just, yeah, they nailed so much. And it's just, yeah, when you watch those two movies in quick succession, you really do think, like, man, Hellraiser is the greatest horror franchise ever. Fuck, there's like 10 more to watch. And then you kind of realize, then you remember quite quickly.
Yeah, I know. It's mad. Like, say,
I'm looking forward to watching 3 and 4 still, though, because 3 still has a lot of good points and it is still a solid movie. And then, like, 4 I haven't seen in so long at this point.
Yeah.
That was when I gave it up. It'll be fun to rewatch. That's why. Pinhead in space.
Yeah, that's why it's funny that it's these ones, because this is how far I got last year when I was like, yeah, I'm gonna watch them all, and I gave up after 4. But like, there is some fun in them, but even what 2 did, and obviously 2 is really awesome, but you immediately have to realize, like, oh, they're changing all the fucking rules. Like, the idea that you summon them with this box and, you know, you're choosing between pain and pleasure and all this stuff, like, it just goes completely out the window. They immediately break the rules, and it just becomes way more of like a, we like these guys, oh, they're like Jason, they're the unstoppable, immovable force that kills people, and that's all they are.
Well, it is, because obviously they get the girl to do the puzzle box, and Julia and Channard are just hiding behind a two-way mirror and then just sneaking to hell.
I know, like, it is, it's so fucking stupid. Like I say, even the second one, which is great, they fuck up all of the rules straight away. And so, like, if you are like a Clive Barker purist of that first book and film, there is so much to hate about it. Because, like I say, the actual lore, which is what makes Hellraiser, and that's why, again, everyone who's a Hellraiser fan has to read the Scarlet Gospels, because that is the lore to a way that we've never seen before, because, you know, it was a novella in the 80s to now a fully fleshed out novel for the first time. And it's, like I say, arguably the greatest piece of Hellraiser media we've ever had outside of that first film. Actually, it is. It definitely is. You know, it goes for Hellraiser 1, then Scarlet Gospels. Like, it's that good. But yeah, it's they're a fun time. Like I say, I really want to check out the that weird new version as well of 4 and see if it's actually too different. Because yeah, now that I watched it only last year, like I won't be watching that version again. See if
we get that version.
Yeah, we get both versions on it, both in 4K.
Oh, nice. I wasn't 100%.
I'm pretty sure, though, and it is relatively new as well. So pretty cool indeed. But that is it for another week. Another week of us talking about our good old beloved Hellraiser. But yeah, we'll be back soon. I'm not sure what we're doing next week, but it might be for Thanksgiving. Yeah, because that'll be in a couple of weeks. I cannot wait. I can't believe Thanksgiving is finally here. Like you need to do what I'm doing in revisiting all of Grindhouse. I'm getting in the right mindset because I've already watched Death Proof and Planet Terror, of course, which are phenomenal, two of my all-time favorite movies. But it immediately gave me the itch. That's where I'm like, I need to watch Machete.
Oh, you're Machete in it.
I'm probably gonna Machete Kills it. I'm already as a side link, wanna watch Sin City and Sin City 2. It's all great. It's all linked and it's all beautiful. And let's say then you can watch the fake trailers, and then you can be like, well, now I've got to watch every Edgar Wright and Rob Zombie movie as well. So it's all great.
Go on.
Exactly. That's how it works. They're all part of it. Listen, Last Night in Soho and Devil's Rejects, they're in the universe. So I'm just gonna have to watch them again, I guess.
I'm not going to lie. I have been thinking a little bit about Rob and how the trilogy might need to be rewatched.
Yeah, I need to watch House.
With just 31 as well. Mm-hmm. Those, you know, just watch those four movies. I had a phase of watching them during for Halloween multiple years on a row, and for some reason I didn't this year. I thought it would be ironic to not watch a horror movie this Halloween. I didn't enjoy that social experiment, but also just time got in the way. But I do really want to give them a rewatch because it's been over a year, and what have I been doing?
Yeah. I've been thinking about watching House for a while. That's been there. And it's like, and then and then the natural step is to just watch all of them, which would be great because Devils is like one of my all time favorite movies. And Free from Hell, I've like still barely seen. Like, I've probably seen it like three times total.
It's just a fun journey, isn't it?
Yeah. 31's an interesting one. Like, I love your love of 31. Because I really like 31. I know you were like obsessed with that film. There was a time I remember after we saw that where you were on like the Psycho Goreman kick of just watching that like once a month.
I know it is like, and it definitely is like this weird relationship with the film where it's like there are faults and there are big segments to film that I don't enjoy, namely the start, but the second they get in the game, I love it. It's on a whole nother level. Like, I've never had the balls just to start the film at that point. And I don't know why, because I'm pretty sure I'd enjoy the film more. But I almost have to, like, get through that opening. And it's not bad, but it's just slow. And that dialogue that I don't necessarily love to, like, dialed up to 11. Like, I should just watch the opening scene with Richard and then flick to them getting, like, the bags taken off their heads.
Yeah, but you got to earn it, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. I always feel like I have to, but I'd love to have the balls to just be like, nah, do you know what? I'm going to treat myself.
Yeah.
I'm just going to watch the 60-minute version.
I've said that before where it was like, the only one I can randomly think of is when we discussed the Batman, where I was like, there's a whole section in that film that I would definitely skip if I were to ever rewatch it. And then the problem is you just end up going, well, I'm never rewatching this film.
Mate. It's so random because I rewatched the Batman last week.
That's crazy. I haven't even thought about that film since I saw it.
Well, it was one where I saw it. I saw it on there, and I was like, I love Robert because I just recently watched Lighthouse because of the 4K that I picked up, and I was like, I love Robert. I really like the director. Like, visually, this looks fantastic. Like, I remember the villains, and I was like, why
the Riddler
is this
was
not,
great
like,
as well.
Yeah, why is this not an absolute banger in my head? And then
there's a lot of reasons.
I'm watching it. Yeah, and I'm just watching it, and I'm like, God, everything about it, there's so much of it that should be cool.
Oh, the soundtrack's the best part. Cool. Like that constant like theme that keeps kicking in.
But even that, like there was a point where I was like, this soundtrack's a banger.
Yeah.
And then there was a point later on where I was like, this fucking song again.
Yeah, because you hear it
like,
10,000 times.
Yeah. Where it's like, what's my favorite song in the world? Hearing it 50 times in the space of an hour, I'm probably going to get sick and tired of it. And that's what this soundtrack was.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a very strange experience watching it again where I was like, I absolutely don't love this movie. Like, I don't hate this movie, but it's just not a banger. But it feels like all of the ingredients are there.
Oh yeah,
and yeah, it was a very confusing second watch.
Yeah, from like my how I felt when that was first announced, where yeah. on paper like Matt Reeves directing a Batman movie with Robert, I was convinced this was going to be like one of my favorite movies ever, and then yeah. it just became like, I didn't hate that, I enjoyed it. There's things about it I fucking hate, and whole segments I'd cut out, and I don't really like the ending. But like, yeah, there are some moments of it that are. Phenomenal.
Yeah, like how do I then rank that mm-hmm. in a Batman movie list that doesn't involve Ben Affleck? Like, yeah. you know, I'm because you know, clearly there's a bottom of a list, but I'm like, I don't know, you know, where this, you know, like,
well, to me,
you know,
it's pretty easy. Fucking,
yeah, but because even then, like, I love those shitty ones that everyone hates. Yeah,
that's so. What I'm saying, because they're better than that.
Yeah.
to me, it's the most obvious tier list ever. Is it's Ben Affleck at the bottom, yeah. then it's Robert, then it's those cheesy Val Kilmer and George Clooney, and then it's the Nolan stuff. Yeah. Like, it's very obvious.
Wait, what about Keaton?
Oh, yeah, that's difficult. Keaton just below Nolan, but I need to those are the movies. God, I think about 88 Batman all the time, where I'm like, I need to watch this more. Because it was at the cinema recently, and I was like, God, that'd be such a sick one to see at the cinema.
That's the thing. Those two movies are god tier.
Yeah, they're amazing. I'm a bit too young for them.
Yeah, and the problem was we watched them at the same time we would have just been watching Val Kilmer as Batman. So we just kind of munched them together in our minds, where it's like... Oh yeah, Jim Carrey as Riddler and
Jack Nicholson, you know, Joker. Like, that's the same.
they're in the same universe. And it's like, oh no, they're very not.
Yeah,
you know, and yeah, you know, yeah, Mr. Freeze, like, yeah, he's sick, brilliant, love it. Like, you know, but they really don't compare when you look at them. Like, they're just tonally so different.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're talking about Batman now, so it's time to go.
All time. That's a throwback right there.
Yeah.
It was just so funny when you mentioned it.
Yeah, and, that is funny that you watched it. Because I haven't thought about it recently, and I wasn't even gonna reference it then, but I couldn't think of a better reference to get my point across. Ooh. Of like something where I'd said, you know, oh, this is cool, but there's a whole set. The only thing I could think of was that recent Hellraiser movie, because I'd said that after watching it once, but then I have rewatched it, and now I would say, like, no, don't watch any of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, I said that on the show last year. I rewatched it before we did year end. Like, it's the visuals and the Cenobite stuff still awesome, but the terrible lead protagonist and those group of characters is so painfully bad that I cannot watch that film anymore. Like, it just straight up ruined it for me, which is such a shame. But yeah, that was episode 370. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone. I never could, and how could I start now? Honey, I'm down, not that I need ya. Look at me now.